The Money Show. Business Unusual.
That wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. This Business Unusual brought to you by FNB, introducing the innovative 48-hour cash accelerator investment account. It's more than just banking to FNB. That's why they help. Four balls. No, that's golf and tennis mixed up all together. Colin Cullis.
Yes.
Capping salaries. You're trying to get into trouble with the boss, are you?
That would do it. And for the couple of posts I put in the lead up to us wanting to do this, most people would just write it off as ridiculous. And truthfully, it has been attempted many times. And ridiculous, never going to happen, get out of here, is usually the way people do react to it. And so really nowhere has a maximum wage been really implemented. They've looked at ratios and other such methods, but nobody has said you're not allowed to earn more than this, unless it was a completely crazy dictatorial sort of place, and nobody really wants to live in one of those either. But I must say that the issue that I'm going to try and unpack here, for it is unusual, is also very complex. And looking at the various numbers and statistics available, you can make a variety of cases, good, bad, and indifferent. So I'm not looking to try and say definitively what needs to be done. I'm hoping I can simply illustrate what it currently is. And then, you know, much brighter people than me will hopefully weigh in and start exploring further how we can address this. So that's the objective. And looking at just ratios, and the US has been tracking this for a while. Their first attempt at actually setting something was back in the 50s. Back then, the CEO ratio to the lowest paid workers in a company was about 20-1. Something that you wouldn't feel very comfortable with, but you could kind of understand perhaps these are people doing new industries and expanding things. Back in the 80s, it had moved to 120-1. And by 2013, it was over 200 times to 1, with the most crazy version I saw was in 2015, JCPenney's CEO was earning 1,975 times more than the lowest paid worker in his organization. He's no longer with them, but it kind of illustrates the point that this is just no longer the way that it can continue. It's not sustainable. And for a group in the UK, they try to find a better way to try and illustrate this. So they said, let's look at the CEO's salary and calculate how many days in the year he would have to, or she, would have to work before they would earn the same as, in this case, the median for an average UK worker. So the median is, you know, half the salaries are above, half the salaries are below. And you kind of imagine, well, a couple of months, half the year, you know, what it might be. And it turns out it was the 5th of January.
5th of January, 5 days. Well, does that include the public holiday on the 1st?
It assumes they start work on the 4th.
So it's 2 days.
Yeah. That is kind of, you know, that kind of puts it in context. So I went to go and have a look. Well, what is the situation here for South Africa? And again, finding all of the numbers and fitting them together isn't always easy. So you take the bulk of CEOs in South Africa, the average salaries from the sort of the right across the board, and it's about a month, and you will have an average South African CEO earning what his average worker in South Africa would have earned. But then there's the horrible stat that you see, of course, when you take an average salary, you take all those with very high salaries and those with very low salaries and divide it by the total number. So you don't really get a true reflection. And in South Africa, 60% of South African employed people are on less than 5,000 rand a month. When you do that calculation with the average CEO, it's now less than a week. And so I went the whole hog and I said, what is the top CEOs, JSC CEOs, total remuneration package against what somebody who is in the 60% of South African earners, in which case they would have exceeded their total annual salary before lunchtime on their first day back at the office. So I think it's something we should be addressing.
It's something we should be addressing. And then the argument that's going to be thrown straight back at you by the consultants who go to boards and say, this is how much you should pay yourselves and each other. They will say, well, if you do that in this very high tax environment, you know, these guys have to pay 45% tax rates. It's good for the fiscus, firstly. And the second thing is, if we don't pay the CEOs, they're just going to take their skills somewhere else. Because, you know, CEOs, South African CEOs, are highly sought after around the world. How would you counter that in that sort of scenario? Because, CEOs in South Africa are pretty well paid for what they do, but many of them could work elsewhere.
Well, the biggest thing I could say is whether the CEOs decide to work here or not, South Africa has to address the issue in one of a variety of ways. And, and it seems to be that there are three critical factors. And what was kind of impressive, despite me having really painted a very bleak picture of the income disparity, as in the salary in income disparities, that's not where the greatest disparities actually lie. South Africa has made actually some progress in bringing the sort of distribution of that a little closer to parity. And the three factors are the income distribution, the wealth distribution, and then what I see termed as the social safety net. So wealth distribution is the one that really gets a lot of people sort of worked up, because it holds that the top 10% of South Africa's earning population control 90% of the wealth. And that wealth creation isn't just a salary that you get paid, money that you can spend. And I recall you recently chatting about, you know, money making you happy, or how much money you must have to make you happy. This wealth creation is the thing that actually will give you a return over time. It generates an income of itself, or it is something that appreciates in values, you know, shares and property and those sort of things. And that's the kind of thing that actually seems to be the much more difficult one for anyone actually to come up with a real way of managing. And the third element, the social safety net, this is a US series of studies where they were looking and saying, you know, income inequality isn't just bad, you know, for people not getting a fair wage. It actually has an impact on people's actual health. And it's not that crazy to actually work this out, because if you're on minimum wage, as it were, your medical benefits are probably low, where you're living is probably less secure than you'd like. And so there's a lot of other stresses that come from living in an insecure environment. And so increasing a social safety net, something that a state, for example, can intervene with, making people healthier, or giving them access to better healthcare, better education, and making their environments more secure with better amenities, you can see how they then could be more productive, and so you could expand it that way. So these aren't sort of like quick and easy wins, which is why I say if anybody has or offers a quick fix, they either don't understand this or they're wrong, because it's just not a simple thing.
It's most certainly not a simple thing. And one of my personal bugbears that I've got with our economic policy, or the shocking lack of economic policy, or the fog around policy, depending on how kind you want to be, is what is happening in the South African economy is in fact making things worse for the poor and better for the super rich. People who've got global assets, and most of the super rich in South Africa, people who've taken businesses out of the country, have taken money out of the country quite legally over the years, if they convert the value of many of their offshore assets back into rands, it makes them even richer, as the currency loses value. And so many of our policies are causing the rand to lose value, are losing confidence, and it perpetuates the problem rather than solving the problem. So we've got a policy crisis, we've got a greed crisis, and we've got an underperformance crisis amongst lower income earners. They simply are not capable of breaking through that critical 5,000 rand a month barrier for 60% of people who work in South Africa. It's really quite pitiful, and these are guys who are not making a contribution to the tax take either. So the burden falls, and this is when it comes to the sustainability of your wealth. If you're not going to find a way to solve this problem, your wealth is going to get attacked time and time and time and time again.
Yeah, and thankfully there are some people who are looking to address it. Certainly with CEOs' wages, Switzerland in 2013 actually looked to put in a cap of 12-1. They voted against it, understandably, I guess. The UK currently has Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, calling for that ratio to be determined and for it to be implemented. I doubt he will get it quite in that way, but the conversations usually lead to something that it improves it. The US, the Dodd-Frank Act, was supposed to implement this year the introduction of mandatory, you know, you had to declare what that ratio was. You didn't have to, you know, set it at any amount, but you at least had to declare what it was. And that looks like it's going to be scrapped, because in the rewriting of it with the new government there, it's unlikely to remain in it. However, there is one guy from the UK London School of Business Economics, Alex Edmonds, and he's saying that the issue with these long-term incentive, that's, I forget the full name, long-term incentive schemes for CEOs, is they're quite opaque, and they're very kind of difficult for anybody to see exactly that they're meeting the objectives that they require. I.e., they can be gamed by a clever CEO focused on sort of a short-term thing of delivering either a share price increase or a specific delivery or cutting costs, which sometimes doesn't work for the benefit of the long-term sustainability of the companies. And so he suggests something, and I won't go into the details here, but there's a simplicity element, a transparency, and a sustainability element. And for South Africa, it might include something like top CEOs get rewarded with all the fantastic packages that they need, but it should be in shares that that they have to hold on to for at least the length of time that they are serving in that position. And those same shares must be part of a package to also compensate workers right throughout the business. That way everybody benefits when the share price goes up, rather than some guy gets a bonus for a performance detail rather than the actual share price.
Absolutely. Colin, we need to wrap up there. But I mean, one last point, if you like.
Well, no, there's a lot more online. I can't say that this is, this is sums it all up or even does it justice, to be fair. But I really was surprised by how significant this is, and it needs to be addressed, and hopefully by some very clever people.
Getsa Gordon, most famous for storming out of the PPC boardroom, ending up with a big fight at the board, then asking for his job back. We know the story, and that caused all kinds of consternation. The one thing he did the moment he arrived at PPC, though, which would seem from the outside to be incredibly smart, was that he tried to reduce the pay gap. He trimmed executive salaries and said to the executives, you want to work in this business, this is what you can expect to be paid. And he used that money to bolster the salaries of lower income earners. It made him very popular with the rank and file, but less popular with his own executives, who said, hold on a second, but surely we're worth more than this. We can work elsewhere. And it's very difficult for one company to do this in isolation. I think he lost a couple of executives at that particular time. Colin Cullis with Business Unusual.